Five, four, three, two, one. Yay! It worked!
Welcome everyone to the Sunday Roast. We have some excellent guests this week. Curtis, can you please introduce yourself?
Oh, do you know what? I'm so glad you invited me back on. It's a pleasure. My name is Curtis Daly. I am a contributor at Turn Left Media. I think it's been too long since I've come on. Slightly my fault there, I think. So I hope we don't make it too much of a too long to the next time. But thank you for having me on again.
You're not on the naughty list, okay? Don't worry.
I hope not, yeah. I don't know how many naughty lists I'm actually on yet, so let's not add another one to that one.
Paolo, can you please introduce yourself?
I'm a virgin on the show, though, in comparison. And my name is Paolo. I run a seed import business, or I try to. It's rather difficult at the moment. I'm also the founder of EU Flag Mafia as well, and that's can tell a few stories about that. And I'm very well known in my industry for my pro-EU views in horticulture, and loud and proud.
My wonderful co-host, Big Madge, can you please introduce yourself?
Big Madge Studios. I run the Big Madge Studios YouTube channel, where we cover lots of British news and all sorts of nonsense. And on this podcast, I'm joined with Alex.
Hi, I'm Alex. I'm a historian, journalist, author, and political scientist. And today, we're going to start off with horticulture. We're going to start with the seeds. The seeds of life. Can you tell us what's been going on with that, Paolo? Because the impression I'm getting is it's just not being talked about, and it's all about food security.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy what's going on at the moment. So let's start right at the beginning. We are in the UK. Britain has the oldest botanical gardens in the world at Kew. We have the oldest horticultural society in the world, the RHS. Oh, don't forget all the Victorian plant hunters, Darwin, etc. We have a passion for horticulture in this country, English roses, etc. So we're starting off from there. Okay. Now, we don't want to import viruses. We don't want to export viruses on seeds. And the seed industry and the plant industry has always been very, very mindful of this and very professional. And we've always followed the rules. Horti, by the way, the difference between horticulture and agriculture. Horticulture is plants and seeds for you, the people, allotmenteers, you go to your garden centre, etc. Farming is agriculture. That's a totally different thing. That's 100 acres of wheat or corn or whatever. I don't do that. I'm in horti. And it was a subject that was never spoken about during the referendum, apart from by me. And, you know, we've basically been thrown under a big red bus. It is impossible to bring in tomato and pepper seeds at the moment. It's Brexit didn't happen 8 years ago. Brexit happened this year for importers and exporters when the border control points that you've heard so much about came into force. January the 29th was the first tranche, which was documents, 100% document checks. But 30th of April was 100% document and goods checks. And that has caused all the problems. So I'll give you an example. Tomatoes get through all of the EU stuff, all the biosecurity, phytosanitary certificates, plant passports, you name it. Our seeds arrive clean, all right, from Italy. I represent the oldest seed brand in the planet called Frankie Seeds. And wow. And then they're hitting the border control points and some of them are being incinerated on site. And the reason for that is something we spoke about during Remain campaigning, which is something called divergence. Basically, what has happened is there are 10 viruses on an EU phytosanitary certificate, but British government, DEFRA, decided to add another one. But it's such a banal virus, it's so minor, such an insignificant virus that the EU decided not even to bother putting it on their phytos. So basically, you've got a situation where 10 tests have been done, and the goods arrive at the border control point, which requires 11 tests. And so they're automatically illegal. That's it. And they're incinerated. So we're talking about tomatoes and peppers. None of the seed companies in this country have managed to get any of tomatoes or peppers into the country, pretty much. And so we had 40 tomatoes in our range last year. Now we've got four. And we had 27 peppers and chilies in our range last year. Now we have one. Tell me when this gets too difficult. If there's
Well,
no tomato seeds, there's no tomatoes.
but we've got turnips.
Norfolk is sorted. So this is where we are. I mean, the border control points, look, lorries are getting down there. They're spending 11 days there in the summer heat. All the plants die. They're chucking plants off the lorries,
Before they
putting them
come
back
into the
on.
border, they are they.
Yeah, at the UK border. A friend of mine runs another seed company, and he was telling me yesterday that he had some sunflower seeds on his pallet. And sunflower seeds do require a check. Fair enough. Okay, whatever. That's great. But the haulier took it to the wrong border control point where there's no AFA inspector. And AFA said, okay, the whole pallet has to be destroyed. Everything on that pallet was permitted into the UK. The sunflowers just needed testing. They couldn't move it from one BCP to another, so they just destroyed the whole pallet.
What did you
And
make
he
of?
said, can't we send it to Ukraine? Nope.
You're joking.
Nope.
Because it would have to go through the rest of Europe again, and so therefore.
No, their argument was that it was in the UK, but actually at a border control point, you're at the border, you're not in the UK. It's like being airside at an airport. So there's a load of.
What did you make? I mean, obviously, I made that terrible joke about coffee saying that we should just all eat more turnips. How did you react when she act? I mean, that's a genuine thing she was suggesting. It's like it was almost coming off as like we're spoilt in our choice. We should eat turnips and be grateful that we get that as a product. What was your reaction to that? And
Do you know what can you say? I mean, there's a level of stupidity and not understanding that's led to to where we are now. You know, at the end of the day, one of the things I found out about Brexit, especially, look, what where I am now is the reality. It's what we said would happen, but it's worse. We've just found out that Holland are no longer able to send peas, broad beans, and beans over. And it's not because they don't want to, it's because they're not allowed to by the border control points. And so, look, we're in a situation where I'm not just some Remainer who's whining. I'm a business owner. I employ people here in Harrow. I pay my taxes. I do everything. And I'm a seed importer that can't import seeds. I can import many seeds, but you know, we're stuck, just completely stuck with other things. And it just seems naive to say, oh, well, you know what? You don't want to have Italian food. You don't want to have it. Let's eat turnips. You know, I import Italian varieties. I'm very proud of that. Tomato seeds from the slopes of Vesuvius. You know, Neapolitan basil leaves bigger than your hand. In Naples, we keep buffalo, so that's always used to wrap mozzarella. All of these amazing varieties, and I love British food. Look, I love anything that's good, artisan, fair trade, slow food, whatever. But you know, let them eat turnips is just like
I'm going to
angry.
throw, I can tell. And I would be frustrated at this. I'm just going to throw it over to the other guys. Have you noticed a difference in terms of variety and choice that you've not been able to get off the shelves? Have you noticed shelf life being? I asked this last week about shelf life of food being a little less. Have you noticed that as well, Curtis?
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, before I get onto that, I find it so funny, actually, and ironic that the one of the main arguments for Brexit was to cut red tape and regulation and make things easy. And in fact, it's become far more bureaucratic, as we've just seen. I mean, I didn't even know about how tomatoes are destroyed because, in fact, on our side, we actually have higher regulation. Well, we say higher regulation, but the 11 tests, as you've just laid out, that 11th test probably is meaningless. That is completely anathema to what politicians have been saying. They said we're going to cut this regulation so you can get your food. This is going to be better for businesses, and we can trade easier. We have more free trade. But I mean, look, we've been integrated in this block for so long, and you know, when the vote came, I'll admit I was not solidly Remain straight away. I was sort of in between. But part of the reason why I ultimately thought Remain was the best option economically. It was just we're so wedded to this. We are going to spend the next 10, 20, 30 years trying to come up with something new. And we're probably going to come up with something quite similar to the EU anyway. Half of our trading comes from the European Union, so it made no sense. And this is a perfect example of how politicians either didn't understand or lied to say it's going to be so much better for enterprise. All this red tape is going to go. Well, we're seeing how bureaucratic Brexit is right now.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I'll give you a great example. One of the things that I think many Brexiteers didn't appreciate or didn't do is they didn't see it as a two-way street. So they you know we've got a problem importing seed, but at the same point we can't export roses. English roses are the best in the world. The English rose companies send them to Holland and Germany and Italy where they're very, very highly prized. Can't ship them.
They won't
Well,
go through. Why not?
I'm not a rose grower, I don't know, but there's problems with soil. Soils can contain bugs. You know, there's all sorts of things, but it's just the amount of bureaucracy and red tape. You know, these plants are put on lorries. They're on the lorries for a long time. Do you really think a lorry driver is going to water 10,000 plants in August on the back of a lorry? It's not going to happen. So
What
they have
nonsense.
issues. It's not my field, but I know that there are problems exporting roses and other plants from our brilliant UK nurseries.
With the flowers, the Dutch also have a problem exporting their flowers here, so
Yeah,
it'd be the
totally.
same thing. It'd be basically the same sort of checks happening. So for whatever reason, it could be down to viruses or whatever. They check the plant, so that it makes sense. It'd be both sides of the border would have the same problem.
One of the things that I have found, especially, and this probably is in every sector, is inconsistencies and misinterpretations. You can have two plant health inspectors, or four or five, each with a slightly different understanding and applicating of the rules. It's driving me mad. It's driving me mad. I'm only 20 years old. Look at me.
I've got a florist down the road that's just given up trying to import from Amsterdam. Just
Oh.
completely given up. Just don't know. We'll just have to source it from the UK. There's no point. And it's just crazy. It's just damaging business. Go on.
This is one of the things. So I'll just jump in there. Sorry to
No.
interrupt. Again, people used to say to me, we'll just buy UK goods, this, that, and the other. And I said, that's great. That's brilliant. We should support UK. Absolutely. We live here. We support farmers, etc. But you can't get Italian mozzarella from Abruzzo from the UK. I want English cheddar. I want Chinese soy sauce. I want Italian mozzarella.
I think that's a really good point because I think it ties in well with obviously the farmers' protest. And there should be a push to try and support our own in this country. I understand that, but it's not always possible, as you just outlined. And obviously, the whole farmers' protest, they're saying, well, if you don't support farmers, you ain't going to get any food. But they forget about the large amounts of imports that happen. I believe, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure we import far more than we do in our own country. So, none of that is being addressed, and I think, to be honest, though, I mean, we're discussing the intricacies of what's happening after Brexit. But let's be honest, the entire argument or campaign was based on an emotional appeal. It was very cultural. It was bringing down immigration. It was very much, appealing to that sense of Britishness. But there wasn't really a wide debate on the. What could happen? I know people like yourself were shouting for the rooftops. This is going to be so bad for business. But just because you were talking about it doesn't mean we had a particularly sensible debate in the mainstream media. It's very difficult to have this kind of discussion in the mainstream media, given that it's very hard to understand for people. The media sort of relies on sound bites. A lot of people did not know this was going to happen, and that's entirely down to the politicians who decided to lie about the position, what was going to happen with Brexit, just so they could appeal to some sort of populism, some right-wing populism. And it's completely shameful on their part.
It's essentially creating a two-class system, isn't it? I mean, the more you delve into it, the more you realize there's a large chunk of it was racism and creating a two-tier system. There's no arguing about that. And that's part of the way the economy is driven. That's
Would you
a
argue,
separate story. I mean, it's not just within horticulture. There was a story today. And I'll throw you back in a second, Curtis. There was a story this week on chemical companies, UK chemical companies. Same thing, issues with diversions, but also labelling, also getting imports in. And it's not even just with chemical companies. We've heard this from construction. They can't get stuff over, which they need because we don't have it here. It's interesting you were talking about Vesuvius and like the volcanoes that you have in Italy and Sicily, where essentially you've just got good nitrates. You've also got different rules and regulations, I think, for wheat and how it's grown. I think that's part of the
I'm not
reason
sure about
when
wheat. It's not my area of expertise. But, you know,
you.
Italy is the only country in the world that has a food police. I'm not kidding. You
No,
reform the
that
food
doesn't
police.
surprise me. That
Parmesan cheese both have their own, you know, teams. of police that check the origins of the milks and you know, absolutely uniform police. So standards are really, really high in Italy. But what we're going to see now is we're going to see standards drop because we can't, you know, I specialize in heritage endangered seeds as well, seeds are at risk of being lost forever. And I've had to stop bringing some of those in, which is a real shame because they need to be supported. So 93% of the vegetables that existed 100 years ago no longer exist today. And that's been on our watch, you know. And so
Sorry, did you
we're the
say
good guys.
93% don't exist? They've sort of
So
gone
of the
extinct.
varieties. So 93% of all the varieties that existed 100 years ago don't exist anymore.
That's crazy. We've limited
It
ourselves,
is.
haven't we, in order to do mass production farming?
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
Which
So
is
it's a big
wild
subject.
because.
Seeds are the big subject. And it's a subject that nobody ever talks about. Nobody ever thinks about. Everything comes from seed. Everything you put in your mouth, except from water, comes from seed directly or indirectly. And I always give kids, you know, when I'm telling them, I always describe a Big Mac. Why not? You know, the bread's come from seed, the sesame seed, even the patty has come from seed. The cow's eaten grass, you know, the ketchup, the ice cream, the tea, the coffee, the milk. Everything has come from seed directly or indirectly. And yet here we are.
And it's interesting as well because obviously Trump is on the horizon saying he wants a trade deal and he wants us to give up our socialist ways. You go, yeah,
But look at
just
the
like
food
what?
standards that they have in the States. You know, they are lower than ours in the EU. Things like juices, like peach juices and stuff, can have a minimum. Sorry, can have a content of up to 4% maggots, for example. Sounds delicious. All that protein. There you go. And there's, you know, there's the hormones and the antibiotics. We've heard all the stories. About it, and that exists. You know, those are realities. We don't want them here, and the EU is a really good buffer for us stopping those. But also, you know, our producers here do want to export our excellent produce too. And I'm of the opinion. Look, people say to me, "Oh, you're Italian, whatever." You know, I'm a London Italian. I'm born here. My great grandmother came here in 1890 when there was a mass immigration from Italy. And look. One is my country, the other is my culture. And there is no conflict. If you're Irish background or Scottish or Indian, whatever, you can celebrate that and be proud. And you know, I'm an emergency responder. I serve my community in that way. I go on duty and I get 909 calls and you know, I'm a volunteer with the NHS at LAS. Sorry?
I'm gonna have to ask,
Oof.
Italy versus England, Euro final?
Yeah, come on, Forza Italia. No, but it's great though. It's banter.
Of
It's
course.
fun. It's you know, it's life. We have loads of wine. We have food everywhere. Lots of screaming. Lots of shouting. You know, vive la
It's good stuff.
différence. But
Of course. There's
it's
always
back in the winners.
not to mention the wine as well. We have to mention the wine.
Oh, well, there you
No, we
go.
haven't, have we?
There's some good English wines. Some good English wines as well, I have to say.
It's coming
Italian
through, isn't
peace.
it? I'll give him
Yeah.
that. English wine and pale ales have come through in the last decade as well. Like it's definitely taken a step forward to compared to what it was. Coffee, Christ, like you get people complaining about that. You get people complaining being like, "Oh, why are we drinking coffee? It should be about tea." And yet people don't
Yeah.
know the history of coffee.
Yeah, that's true. And like, I mean, I bought two coffees the other day from a chain in the high street, and it was like £7.50. I was at the airport the other day, business trip to Italy. I paid £4.05 for a cappuccino, which was about that big, a cup in that big. And it's almost becoming a luxury now. You know, it's but you know, if I could have a drip of my arm with coffee, that would suit me.
I'd say, well, we could, if only we just stopped our coffees and our Netflix, we could afford to buy a house, right? So,
It's so patronizing when you hear that type of stuff. It's like you don't get it, and it's coming from a generation
priorities.
that just,
You see, the
yeah,
thing is,
priorities. It's coming from a generation that just
yeah.
seems to be coming from a generation that seemed to think that is the case, that all they had to do in their day was just cut off Netflix and cut off coffees and they'd be
I
able
mean,
to afford a house. They don't
I
get
could
that
really,
housing prices have like gone up tenfold. Gone, Curtis.
I mean, I could really see why, because obviously, when it comes to like commercialism and consumption, that has massively risen. Obviously, it doesn't mean that our lives are suddenly improved materially just because there's more choice. But obviously, from someone who lived in an age where there was far less choice, to them it looks like we're so much richer because you can choose 100 different choices of Mars bars. You've got your sugar
Totally.
and stuff. That's not a material. That's not a measure of like material well-being. But from their point of view, that's the way they see it.
Thanks, Liz. There's also the argument that, you could have the worst recession and be really struggling for money, but there are certain things that you cannot live without. For me, it would be coffee, a bar of nice smelling soap. Do you know what I mean? There are some things that are totally recession proof because there's so much demand for them.
I mean, I was introduced to coffee when I was 26, 27, quite a late age, and now I wouldn't dream of giving it up. Which I know people tend to, they get to a point in their life where they give it up because they say they sleep better and stuff. But for me, I'm really on that coffee train. I've already next one before we come on the show, to be honest. That's not right. You can see
I'm
it's
actually
quite
going
dark outside for
tea.
not a good idea. All right, you're the British tea. Sorry.
British tea, Earl Grey. Had my coffee in the morning. I mean, I lived in Italy. It was crazy. Even the prices. I was shocked. So I lived in Sicily. So I was shocked that when I realized it was cheaper to go to the restaurant and order a pizza than it was to go to the supermarket. That blew my mind, and I couldn't figure out why that. I couldn't. I don't know. I never researched it.
Would
Don't know
you
if it
mean
was down
going
to
to the supermarket
tax.
getting a pizza or getting a coffee?
Get a pizza. I'd never get a coffee from a supermarket. Not in a million years. It's not from not in Italy. I mean, you'd be frowned upon, I'm
And you go
sure.
to a bar in Italy, a coffee's still a euro.
Yeah, that's
An
the thing.
espresso,
Yeah,
1 euro.
1 euro. It's nothing. It's so cheap over there as well. It makes you wonder what's going on here. Let's sort of continue with the fact that Trump wants this trade deal and wants us to dump our so socialist ways then. What were your thoughts on that, Madge?
I didn't realize we were socialists, to be honest. I must have missed that bit. But that aside, the trade deal stuff, he was pushing that when he was last in anyways. He didn't get off the ground because all the stuff in Northern Ireland. So now that I'd say that's been resolved, it really hasn't. So I don't think he'll get off the ground. There's a lot of dudes with Irish heritage within the American system that would stop that happening because it would cause chaos. It will cause so many problems of goods going from Northern Ireland to Ireland. That hasn't changed. So him getting a trade deal would be very unlikely, but he will do tariffs. He did that before on steel. There will be a trade war guaranteed. It's just the problem is now he's picked on three different groups. He's picked on China for a start. He's picked on Europe. He's also picked on the BRICS countries, because they're threatening to get rid of the dollar. So, I don't know how many people they're going to have left to trade with at this going rate. That's all I'm going to say. They are running out of friends.
Did you see what the Mexican president and Trudeau, the Canadian prime minister, said about all this? Did you guys see that?
Ah, this is what Trudeau said.
So Trudeau was trying to calm down tensions, and I think members of his cabinet came out and basically like, let's go isolationist. He wants a trade war. Let's get it. Let's get trade war cabinet together. Let's get war cabinet together. And you go, oh my
Oh,
God.
I think
And
Canada will get
then
smoked.
the Mexican president, Trump, I think, tweeted that he had a very good conversation with her and that she was going to close the borders and they were going to help out with the drug gangs. And that's what he tweeted. She then responded and said, I didn't have that conversation. I never said those things. And you're like, oh my God. So Russia and Mexico are like either gaslighting Trump or he's actually not having these conversations.
He's not, I doubt he is. I mean, there's rumors they're going to send a Delta Force or some nonsense down there to deal with the cartels. Like, get lost. Like, you're not going to start a hot war with Mexico over cartels. But let's be honest.
Isn't that a movie though? Isn't that, is it
I
Sicario?
think
That's
that's one of the things he
Sicario
was
where they
pushing.
send in like the
Yeah,
Marines
that's
and
one of the
everything
things
else.
they, yeah, it's one of the things, the ideas they have. They want to start a big war with the cartels and stuff. It's like, just tighten up your border power. They're getting the drugs in via cars. Like, it's not hard. It's like, so yeah, I don't think he's going to run out of friends real fast. That's all I'm going to say. And I think it might be a point that when the world says to America, do it then. Go on, do it. You're a big dog. Go on. Let's see what you're about. Because they've started with the really, I don't want to say they're tier two countries, but the BRICS countries are the big developing countries, the up and coming countries. You've got Europe, which obviously has a lot of trade with America. You've got the USMCA, like the old NAFTA partnership with their two neighbors. Who are you going to trade with at that point? Like, Russia got no money, pal. They ain't buying shit from you. Who are you trading with at this point?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I
It
mean,
doesn't make sense.
he's already done damage on global trade. After he had that trade war with China, global trade went down by 0.5%.
Yeah.
You're like, that's billions. I think that might be even upward of a trillion in terms
And I
of
think
economic damage that he's done.
he's dealing with, actors that are quite smart. The EU will go after things that will directly impact his base. And so will China as well. China went directly after American farmers, and they really hamper trade with those American farmers. And I think the EU will do the same thing they did last time. They did the same thing to Bush. And that's it. The BRICS countries will probably do the same stuff as well. And so who are you buying from? A trade war with China would be, again, another disaster. What's his plan here to, this isn't going to help America unless you force manufacturing back into America en masse and you've got the raw materials to do it. What are you going to do? Especially when, if you mass produce all of this stuff, who are you going to sell it to? Because you're having a trade war with everyone else. It
That's the
doesn't
problem.
make sense.
It's going back to the 1920s, 30s America. It's called the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. And God, I think it was Harding. I keep getting them mixed up. It's either Harding or Hoover. One of the presidents basically issued tariffs thinking they could bring in revenue that way. And of course, it's exactly as you said. You put up those trade barriers and then no one wants to trade with you because they'll
We'll
just stick them up. Go on,
get
Paolo.
to a point where it's a bit like Dad's army, where there'd be a packet of tomato seeds under the counter instead of sausages. And it'd be easier to bring drugs in to the States than it would be to bring seeds into the UK.
It's going to be wild, isn't it? Do you have these problems with the US seeds and importing them? Not to suggest that you would want to, and you'd probably have a preference for Italian for a good
All
reason.
seeds come from somewhere. There's excellent chilies from India and Mexico, and there's some from Italy as well. I mean, it's not an exclusive club. Seeds are grown everywhere. But yeah, I mean, it can be easier to bring in some varieties from ex-EU than from 30 miles away from France.
Do you think that was down to
So.
the bad trade negotiations, or do you think that was down to spitefulness on sides, or?
I think the 11th virus was added because Brexit means Brexit. But I mean, the thing about food that you said before, or that someone said before, was food now, fresh fruit and veg actually require a phytosanitary certificate, which they never have before. And when Starmer said about making it easier to bring food in, he means fresh food. He doesn't mean seeds. And also, don't forget that you won't see shortages now. When you'll see shortages, it's something that the farmers call the hungry gap or the hunger gap. And that is February, March, April, when all the British vegetables are running out, the turnips, the parsnips, all that winter kind of fare, the Brussels sprouts, etc. And that's where we rely on other countries with warmer climates like Italy, like southern France, even Morocco, Tunisia, places like that, Spain, Portugal, obviously, for our shortfalls. And what we've done is we've placed a big bloody barrier. We've shot ourselves in the foot. It's like a massive own goal. And it's British farmers that call it the hungry gap because you physically cannot harvest anything February, March, and April. That's how our climate works. That's how seeds work. So you won't actually see shortages until then.
Do you think America could come to the rescue on this?
Look, I think with everything, if the quality is good enough and the price is good enough, it's free trade. There's a demand for some American things. Taylor Swift doesn't do badly when she comes over, does she? And she brings revenue and everything. Yeah, it's great, but it's like everything. We want to export on a fair footing as well. The EU are much more likely to get a trade deal than just little old us back of the queue. Oh, front of the queue, wasn't it? No, back of the queue.
Maybe some point down the line, there might be a UK-US trade agreement, but it's not going to happen anytime soon because our focus is in negotiating with a big bloc, the European Union, to get a trade agreement done. And UK is going to be in the back of the queue.
Back of the queue. Yeah. That's a movie you can get Jennifer Lawrence to do, I'm sure. Instead of The Hunger Games, it'll be The Hunger Gap. It'll be 3 months of just
Yeah.
desolation on farms.
Love
Be a great movie, I'm
it.
sure. Then people will care.
It feels like we've got this split coming through, and it's obviously Reform, Badenoch, all seeming to want to side with the US. And then we've got the majority, the 60% that want to rejoin. We've got this massive split, right? Not down the middle, but we have got a split. I mean,
because
Farage
people can
clearly wants to
see.
be connected to the old empire. That's his
Yeah,
thing.
because people can see the effects, the negative effects that Brexit is having. 8 years ago, the day after, it was the same as the day before, pretty much. But now it's all sinking in. There are shortages of labor across the UK in every sector. There's all sorts of rubbish going on. I was with my hauliers in Italy. I have to keep them sweet because our hauliers no longer wanted to bring our stuff over because it was such a pain in the neck. And she was telling me that sterile medical kits were coming in. They were bringing those in on their lorries, and customs would cut them all open, and so they were no longer sterile. And she
Mad.
said, "You just wouldn't believe. You just couldn't make this stuff up." And it's almost like a them and us. The customs, the BCPs have become this them and us. Like for some reason, we're trying to trick them or smuggle stuff in. And it's totally not like that at all. We've always obeyed the laws and respected the laws and been transparent.
But I'll slightly push back on that. We are having issues with illegal meat coming in, which I assume is being taken off to somewhere in the UK to be turned into mincemeat and sold to us. And we know that customs, I think, are only checking 1 in 10 lorries. And so you're going,
Tomato and
God
pepper
knows
seeds.
what's getting through. That and cigarettes seem to be the two major things because meat's so
And
expensive now.
tomatoes and pepper seeds are having 100% checks.
You're joking.
No,
Might be.
100%, 100%.
It might be they don't have the vets to deal with the meat stuff. It's very possible they don't have, because they talked about a vet shortage anyways in the UK. So it might be possible they're not bothering to check the meat because they don't have vets to check certificates and stuff.
I don't think
That's
they're being
possible.
announced. I don't think they're being announced as meat.
What do you
I think
think?
they're being announced as something else and then skirted through.
It's
I think
possible,
that's where the
yeah.
problem lies. Because again, we don't have enough staff to do the borders and we don't want to spend the money and we don't want to tax the rich to pay for any of this.
Well,
It's just a mad cycle. Curtis, any thoughts?
I was really interested in what probably to shift it slightly back to Trump, actually. Specifically with China. I mean, so the tariffs issue. I mean, this is what people who support Donald Trump, who really like this idea, don't quite get. And the narrative behind it's quite good because it's like, let's bring back manufacturing. And what Madge said earlier, which is good. We can have a manufacturing policy that pushes to build things in, well, in this country and in America, but there is an issue with raw materials. You don't always get access to it. In terms of tariffs, though, that cost always gets put onto the consumer because, China isn't going to pay the tariffs. You pay the tariffs at the border. So China's already sent the goods over. They're not going to retrospectively pay for it. So obviously, businesses are going to pay for that tariff. What are they going to do? They're going to push that money onto the consumer. And it makes everyone, like obviously ordinary people's lives, worse for it. I mean, look, I've heard whispers that potentially Trump might even drop it. I know that he did it on steel, but I could see potentially that he doesn't go through with it due to the pushback. Another interesting thing, and this is actually it was a tweet from Biden a while ago, that I wish I had the tweet in front of me. But he even talked about potentially doing a trade war with China. There's this kind of cons not consensus, but there is this big move now that free trade is starting to slip in, sort of move out of the mainstream. Francis Fukuyama even said that his whole thesis of liberalism and free trade, he's had a sort of a second look as well. So it's not just Trump. However, I wouldn't take Biden seriously if he was. I don't think he would ever do a trade war with them. But the fact that he's saying it is kind of significant. I know he's not going to be in power for very long. It is interesting to see what Trump would do. I could totally see him reneging on the tariff policy because it isn't extremely destructive. And once again, what Maj said was really good is even if you were to have a good industrial policy, if you're pissing off all your trade partners, then you're not going to sell it to anyone either. Potentially, you could have a hybrid where you keep your trade partners on good terms whilst also have a big manufacturing policy. That's potentially one thing, but that's not what Trump is doing. He's kind of doing an either or. He doesn't really know what he's doing himself, really. But it's kind of an either or. Is it economic protectionism 100% or is it free trade 100%?
Yeah,
Go,
it's more
fella.
complicated than that, though, as well, because
Yeah.
we live in a global world. And if
Exactly.
you were to take apart the components of a car, you'd have something from America, the ignition system from Italy, the exhaust from France. Do you know what I mean? So we're actually really interlocked and You know, there's so many layers there. It's, you know, there would be a car, an Italian car is not just made from components from Italy. There'll be stuff from China, from all over the place. So it's more complicated.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly my point. You struggle to go from a 100% economic protectionist system, and then given that there is a bit of a move away from free trade globally, you kind of need to have a rethink of our manufacturing policy without going too far the other way. Because you're absolutely right, it's far too complicated to suddenly say we're just going to do it our own, America first, screw free trade. It's only going to hit the consumer the most.
If you want to see a small scale kind of situation, the UK is like that, where a lot of the manufacturers have left because they can't get the parts in, car makers and things like that. And off the back of what you're saying, Curtis, Biden is in a soft trade war with China over like computer parts and stuff. And he is trying to convince Intel to build more manufacturing and also Foxconn in America. And they've offered heavy subsidies to it. I don't know how far off the ground that has gotten, but they are trying to do stuff like bring manufacturing back. But, like if Trump pisses everyone off, and starts putting tariffs on stuff. What if they put tariffs on like American made like CPUs and stuff that you're buying from China or Taiwan?
And the
Like
thing is, that is
that's
a
what I mean.
good,
It's a bit stupid.
yeah. I mean, it is a good policy to try and build more chips, for example. I think that's very good, and maybe potentially a soft trade war, whatever. But I think that's different to what Trump is doing. And what you've just explained there, it's about pissing off everyone, trying to get your own way, and then realizing, oh my God, no one wants to buy from us. I think it's good to have an incentive to try and build in our retrospective countries. It's good for climate change, for example, because we're not always shipping everything off globally. But there's a way to do it. And it's not fast and it's very complicated.
Yeah, Biden's done it very quietly, whereas Trump's very loud. He's in the face of everyone, and that's what people don't like. World leaders particularly don't like that. I think there's a picture of him kind of staring down a lot of the kind of European leaders, and it just looks very adversarial. It doesn't look like everyone's on the same page. It looks like a fight, which is what Trump wants because it energizes his base. That's what they want: America first, screw Europe, let Ukraine go, and all of this stuff. Why are we fighting over there again? Why are we helping them again? Like they should have dealt with it by now. And so I think he does do that on purpose.
It's short-sightedness. I think I get where everyone's coming from, and everyone's sort of hoping he won't do it. But I think I think I've mentioned it before. He's a bit like Emperor Nero. I won't go into detail about it, but essentially, Trump's second stint, like Nero's second half, they've taken down the guardrails and gotten rid of everyone that was telling him don't do that.
True.
And the comparison I would make with both Trump and Nero is the fact that people just said to him, "Oh, I'll make you unpopular if you do that." And they were so narcissistic, they would take on board that information. Nero just went off the deep end and started whacking everyone. Trump's just fired everyone. And I think because he's just got a bunch of sycophants, and they're just probably also along the lines of America first. I mean, Christ, like you look at that list of picks in the cabinet, they're all mad as a box of March
And they're
hares.
all yes
I
men.
mean, they're all, and that was the problem with Nero. So Nero at the beginning of his reign was actually quite popular and did some good stuff. And he even had Seneca. So Seneca's considered one of the top philosophers of his generation. And he just killed them all. He killed his own mum.
Well, I would say that, look, there's Trump don't listen to a lot of people. What he does still listen to is capital. And if capital says doing trade wars, increasing tariffs or whacking on tariffs isn't a good idea, he's more likely to listen to capital. He is a billionaire from the billionaire class, and the entire cabinet, including Elon Musk, that's the people they serve. In terms of his cabinet picks, are they really America first? I mean, a lot of them are, half of them are like the MAGA people, right? But you still got picks from 2016 or that sort of era. You've got people like Marco Rubio, Huckabee, and I know we're not talking about foreign policy, but I do think there's a slight link. They're incredibly hawkish on foreign policy. So I do think there's kind of the old guard in there as well. You are absolutely right, though, that this administration will be different to 2016 because the guardrails, as you said, have gone. He's unleashed now. Before, he didn't really get to do a lot of the things he wanted to do because he was too busy just firing people and replacing them. He definitely has far more loyalists now, which is much scarier. But I guess, I mean, being a Marxist, that's probably why I'm looking at it this way. I guess he listens to capital the most. And if capital doesn't like these policies, usually capital wins. I don't know if you might not agree there.
Yeah, you know the bottom line though. The bottom line is, I mean, we all have mates and family and friends in America. And I can tell you that my mates are scared. They're absolutely scared of what's going to happen.
And
Should they
what's the thing that's scaring them the most? What is it that's
unpredictability? the far rightedness, you know, it's very far right. It's just the unpredictability and the I won't say lunacy, but the, I can't think of the right word, just the strength of conviction that they seem to have, the right wing, so the hard right.
On your maybe Curtis, I think they'll just be so wanting to be with him, mm-hmm. and wanting to tell him how great he is. That's my concern. So even if they do have those reservations,
yeah,
I don't know if they will bring him to the forefront as much as the others, and I don't know if they'll have the courage to do that. And I think he'll just fire them if they mm-hmm. do that. It wouldn't surprise me after those 4 years in the wilderness, he comes back and he just goes, I've only got 4 years. We all hope he's only got 4 years. He might be just thinking he's only got 4 years, maybe more. And just going, right, I'm just doing it my way and that's it. And if you're against me, I'm just firing you.
He might have thought he lost because of all the people who told him he can't do certain things. He might have thought he lost because of that, because there would have been stuff around COVID where he probably wanted to do certain really bad policies and he couldn't do it. He might have thought, I lost because I listened to these bad advisors.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised.
It's probably an egotistical thing to do. And actually, sort of Biden had that a little bit as well, because I reckon he thinks had I ran instead of Kamala Harris, he would have won, despite the fact that internal polling showed that over 400.
It was a disaster.
It would have been far worse. But I think there's that egotisticalness about, obviously, Trump. I guess, though, my view is that Trump himself, though, kind of serves capital. So it might be in his interest. I'm not sure. I do want to actually wonder, though. I mean, don't you think that Elon Musk is probably the big driver here rather than Trump? Or because
I don't
he's
know,
done the segue. Trump has done the segue.
Trump mocks him. Yeah, that's smooth. Trump mocks Elon Musk. He mocked him a lot on Twitter. So I don't think. And if you see the way, like, they did the UFC walkout, and you had Dana White, and you had Trump at the front, and you had Elon behind him, so he doesn't feel like he's really part of the gang. In that sense, I think Elon's there mostly to get subsidies for Tesla. That's what he wants. Like, he wants more money for Tesla, SpaceX, and stuff like that. I don't think he's a driving force, because I don't think he's such a, I don't know, not a dweeb, but he's just such a, like, he's a nerd, isn't it? Like, in terms of, that's how he's going to look at him. He's going to look at him like he's a nerd.
Yeah.
And, like, when you look at Elon Musk, like, he did have so many props, because he looked like he was a guy bringing, you know, forward green technology and stuff like that. He was cool at one point. You know, he had the flamethrower thing, the boring company. Yeah. He was cool. Yeah. And then he just, I don't know what happened to him. I think he got baited into buying Twitter by a load of right-wing rubes. Mm-hmm. And I think he was never going to be accepted by the left because of how much money he has. There was always going to be that, the problem. His companies have really bad workers' rights as well. He hates unions and strikes. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he was ever going to be accepted by people on the left in general. You know, he was seen as like a Tony Stark figure, Tony Stark incredibly flawed himself. And, you know, the guy bringing the energy. But then I think people realized he was a fraud anyways.
He just looks like a Bond villain now, doesn't he? Like a spoof Bond villain.
He puts up AI pictures of himself in like Roman armor, and you're like, bro, you're not built like that.
You couldn't write a Bond film or a film that's as ridiculous as Elon Musk. It's too on the nose. Reality is more crazy than fiction. And it's like, if you were to write Elon Musk as a character and put it to MGM, they say this, it's just too far-fetched. It's just a ridiculous.
Couldn't believe it.
You couldn't believe it. You imagine, again, you're correct about how he was never like the darling of the left, because we knew that he obviously hated unions, hated workers' rights. He also was always quite problematic, and he had quite right-wing culture views anyway, because his daughter, he sort of he disregarded and abandoned his trans daughter like quite early on. But obviously, I think he was still riding the whole, I'm going to look like a liberal anyway, I support inclusion. And I think it comes down to him that he's a massive loser. He's just a rich loser. He craves to be loved and attention, and he wouldn't get it from the left, and the right are giving him that. And now he's just gone down that pipeline.
Farage.
Yeah, but I think Musk is far worse. I mean, Farage has at least an element of self-confidence in a way, whereas Musk has zero. And he makes decisions, is obviously Twitter, who's absolutely destroyed the platform. He makes decisions about how he personally feels or how he's seen. He's now got rid of timestamps on tweets. Now, it's very important to have timestamps on tweets. Why has he done that? Because people start calling him out that he was writing tweets at like 4 a.m. on his ketamine sort of drive. And now he's removed. This is someone who, I mean, I argue there should be no one with this amount of power. There should be no billionaires. Agreed. But Musk is, has the temerity, or has the emotional unstableness. Yeah, emotional unstableness to be in that position. That's all he does. And I guess that him fawning over Trump is another thing. It's really, really embarrassing. Embarrassing to see.
He wants to be cool. He wants to be. He wants the adoration. I'll tell you, he wants to be like Stark or Seto Kaiba. I'll send you the clip, Alex, the one I want you to put in here in reference to the guy I'm talking about. But that's the guy he wants to be like. He wants to be cool, you know, like everyone looks up to him. He's the rich guy, the inventor. He does all of this amazing stuff. And in reality, he's Thomas Edison, and he's a bit of a fraud. Yeah. You know, everyone kind of, you know, that's who he is.
That's a really good point.
He started Doge, the Department of Government Efficiency.
Yeah.
It's funny because his entire career was built off public subsidies, government subsidies. Is he going to give those back? Of course he won't.
He's getting more. He's getting way more than before.
He's manipulating the government to do that, to improve his
wealth. He did a whole thing where instead of building a bloody high-speed rail, I think in California, they tried to build that hypertunnel thing, and it's a massive fire and safety hazard. And then everyone's saying, look, China have already got high-speed rail across like parts of China. You could have had this. Instead, you've wasted your money on this tunnel where if there's a fire, you're all dead because there's one way in and one way out. The fire services are not getting to you.
It's funny that you brought that up because the other day I spoke to Gareth Dennis. He's a rail engineer who's fired for speaking out against rail safety. And we were talking about the loop from the Boring Company. And these billionaires and a lot of politicians have no imagination. They would rather build an underground tunnel with a couple of Teslas going through, which doesn't solve the problem. And as you just mentioned there, it's actually unsafe rather than investing in high-speed rail. But of course, there's a reason there as well, because it's more likely to make a profit on certain modes of transport, probably not so much on public transport.
That's part of the reason they, there's a questioning of why there's no or a limited amount of public transport. And it's because the car industries got involved and started supporting Republicans who were like, I don't want that. There, it does, I mean, it does exist. I've taken the Greyhound. I've taken trains. You can do it. Yeah. It's just compared to the technological level that they're at, they should be like at the level of Japan and having high speed.
It's the planes
country,
as well.
But
the
you're
planes.
Not going to see that. And it's interesting. Just I'll finish up on this. When I spent 6 months out there coaching football and then a couple of months traveling, everyone's got a car. Everyone's got a car because you can't get around otherwise. It's impossible. And when you suggest, oh, I'll go and walk there, they're like, it'll take you an hour. Like, why don't you have something close to them? Why? It's like a concept that was beyond them.
I was going to say another example of Musk's patheticness is that when they, I don't know if you heard the online phone call between Trump and Musk, and they were talking about oil. And of course, Trump supports dirty energy. And you think that's a big contradiction there, since Elon Musk is the owner of Tesla, which produces electronic vehicles. It's actually in Musk's interests to move away from dirty energy to more clean energy to advance his own company. Yet he's so much of a beg for the Republicans and Trump that he's like, oh, I don't want to attack the oil industry here. You know, this is just my little thing. What are you doing? You're so embarrassing. Like, attack the oil industry. Like, you're a billionaire. And you're CEO of Tesla, and he's that pathetic that he's like, hey, look, I still love you guys. I still love the oil industry too. It's so embarrassing.
As mean as it sounds, yeah, I think his wife left him. His kids don't talk to him. The only people he got are the other goons on Twitter that talk to him. Yeah. That's it. That's the only care he's going to get. And that's sad. You know, he's a billionaire with no real family. It's tragic.
I mean, I would feel sorry for him if he wasn't a billionaire trying to influence. Well, I feel like he largely influenced the US election, now also trying to influence our election.
His biggest crime, if he does it, will be giving Farage a significant amount of money to run in the UK. And Labour's biggest mistake will be if they don't stop that.
Mm.
If they don't shut
that
down now.
Do you
think no, because they're getting money. They're getting money from a lot of different places as well. That's why they won't stop it. They received the highest donations, I think, out of any political party this last run. And so they've lost, I think, I don't know if I've covered it in a video or if I was going to, but they've lost a lot of their small dollar, in America, they call them small dollar donations, like the memberships and stuff. They've lost a significant amount of memberships. And they were very reliant, I think, on big business, especially with that bogus court case they had against former employees of the party. They lost a lot of money on that. And in the end, Starmer gutted the, he basically cancelled it because it cost too much and he got nothing out of it. If they lose, if they don't get big donations, they'll be in trouble as well. And a lot of those businesses are pissed at Reeves. They're real mad at Reeves over the national insurance contribution hikes. Badenoch was at the CBI talking about how Labour misstepped on this massively. So Labour won't plug this gap because they need money as well.
Well, they
That's one
won't
of the
tax it.
things. Yeah.
They won't go for the rich. They
Well,
won't
there's
go
a
for the
reason for
super
that.
rich.
Who backed them?
Yeah, exactly.
The fact they wouldn't increase that top 45% of income tax rate is honestly just diabolical. Is absolutely diabolical. And they're like, oh, we need all of this money and stuff. It's like, bro, just change the tax rate. Like, go back to the old 50% tax rate that we had under New Labour. Like, the fact that Gordon Brown and arguably Tony Blair in some areas are more progressive than the people we have in now is crazy. Is absolutely crazy. I never thought that would happen because typically you'd hope progressive parties go more left. But
I
instead,
did.
they've gone the other way.
I did. I said it to Phil. Like, I was like, none of the policies fix anything. Like, and there's loopholes in all of them. In the renters bill, there's a loophole. That
They
means
did
it
three
does,
prayers.
but nothing changes. No,
The thing is,
I was looking at the workers' rights. You've basically got to have a solicitor to sort this out. Who the fuck can afford that? Like, our wages have not kept up with inflation for 40 years.
I was pleased to see Caroline Lucas. And, she mentioned the elephant in the room. Nobody is talking about Brexit. And she was talking about Brexit on the sofa of a morning TV program and saying, listen, this has cost us twice the black hole, so far that Labour found when they came into power. And there's things that we can do to mitigate it and to reverse some of the damage done. But nobody will talk about it.
Well, I mean, Brexit's a big issue, but I argue it goes beyond that. And I think it's the last 40 years of the great decoupling of wages and productivity. Productivity still going up, but wages flatlining. And we've had that because fundamentally of neoliberalism. And the reason why Labour can't pose a threat to reform or stop them is because they're playing the same game as reform, as Madge pointed out. They brought on billionaires, former Tory supporters, by the way, who jumped ship to Labour because Labour have become the capital B party. And one of them was John Cordwell. He was the guy who created Phones for You. And he simply said on TV, right, on TV said, I like the Labour Party because they support my capitalist commercial interests. And he's absolutely right. He just said the quiet part out loud. And you need, in order to defeat reform, you can't be taking money off them because, look, I think there's a question. I think there's an issue about foreign billionaires pumping money into our politics. Elon Musk, it does not have a right to have a sway over our elections. But again, Labour can't particularly do that because they're taking big money too. So we have a real issue here of a lack of opposition, not just in policy, and I know you've outlined that as well, but because how they play the game. And that's big money in politics.
Yeah,
That's big national
and that
politics.
lack of opposition was clear in America as well. You had Biden, who is someone I totally respected. He was just too old, in the scheme of things, but a
He
weak
said he wouldn't run
opposition.
for a second term. He said, I won't do that. I'm just going to be the sort of stepping stone. If he look, I think the problems with the Democratic Party are far more deep-seated, but they didn't help themselves by having Biden run again and then midway through a campaign, which is kind of unprecedented, really, midway through a campaign, swap it out because Biden was simply cognitively deficient, right? They swapped him out. How do you think that looks to the electorate? Not
It
very
wasn't
good.
just when they saw him at the debates as well, they're like, this guy's fucked. Like, this guy is completely mentally shot. And they tried to blame it on jet lag. But once the public saw those debates, because it was the first one, I think, as well, they were like, what has happened to this man?
And I think it was the right decision to move to Harris. But the problem is, when Harris was asked, like, what are you going to do differently to Biden? She said, nothing. In fact, I'll have a Republican in my cabinet. That's also not good either. I mean, they should have realized how unpopular Biden was. I understand that being the VP, it's difficult. You can't attack the president too much because that's your administration too. But you need to show a little bit of clear water. But I mean, I have the view that it started way before then. But the strategic decisions the Democratic Party took were like, these are the wrong decisions, don't do that. And they went, we're going to do these wrong decisions. And I think it helped Trump's power again.
Completely. I think the disconnect they had with what people were facing on the ground. I've spoken to a few people that have been over there recently, and they're going, the food prices are through the roof. That used to be the staple in the United States. Food prices were cheap. It was like being in Italy. You could get a coffee for like a dollar easily. You know, it was that cheap when I was over there. That, I mean, that was 15 years ago. People are now telling me it's like to eat out was $40. I'm like, you are literally the world's food producer. Everything should be cheap over there. It's like one of your basic staples, and you've had it since the 30s.
Harris had a fairly good policy on that, because she said talking about going after price gouging. But the problem is, do it when you're in government. So I think why wasn't that a policy during Biden's term? Because sometimes you can say you're going to do these things, but people are going to judge you by your record as well. I think probably messaging as well is an issue, because Biden has some good labor policies, some of the most pro-worker policies since probably since FDR. And this is the speaks to the technocratic nature of the Democratic Party. They should have campaigned saying we're just as radical as FDR. You know that guy you love, the really popular president, despite who you vote for. We're just like them. But they were kind of like, we got this really good policy. okay, like Trump doesn't have policy; he has vibes. And guess what? Vibes win election. And the Democrats have zero vibe, and they had some policy, not far enough if you ask me, but they had some policy that made people's lives better, but they had zero vibe and zero messaging. And unfortunately, politics, the more we go on, it's becoming less about policy and more about feelings and vibes, which is very disappointing, because I know we love our policy.
Is that a Nico slogan?
It's not vibes.
It sounds like it. It sounds like something you'd say.
I think that's what his slogan was for London Mayor. It's all about the vibes. That was it.
Well, that's right, man.
He came number one. He beat Lawrence Fox, who had a million and a half behind him. So.
That was very cathartic to see.
Yeah, that was good.
I don't know. Him holding that L behind Sunak, that was my favourite election moment. That was great. I loved it. I loved it so much.
Okay. Who would you put on Santa's naughty list? Who would be your number one person to stick at the top for this year? Paolo, who would you stick at the top?
Oh, my God. Well, my mortgage went up by a couple of £100, so it would have to be Liz.
This is number one.
And her lettuce.
Lettuce did a good job. Curtis?
That's a really tough question.
You can only have one.
You can only have one. I don't want to sound like I'm saying it just because of the discussion, but I'm looking at the levels of harmfulness that comes from this person, and it's going to be Elon Musk. And I say that because obviously not just the US election, but the story that he might be giving money to reform. And if you're going to try and influence our election from a billionaire's perspective, you certainly get on that naughty list, and he's going to be there for a very long time.
Madge?
I'm going to put Rachel Reeves on for her really middling budget. I think that was an abomination.
Yeah,
I looked at it, I was like, what is this? What am I looking at? Not impressed.
Not happy bunny.
Who have you got?
I'd stick the whole Reform Party on there. I mean, it's just
you only get one
rhetoric. You only get one.
No, you can't do that. You only get one.
My show, my rules.
Wow, I'm a co-host. Now it's my show. He's gone crazy with power.
No, Reform have the lowest contact in Parliament as well.
Just because you haven't mentioned him, I mean, it's a tough one between, just because none of you guys have mentioned them, it's been a tough one between Trump and Farage, and they're sort of in positions where they can't necessarily do major damage yet, but I can see them heading that way, and it's a sort of, it'd almost be a preemptive naughty list, I think. I mean, this shit that Trump came out with in the election, like the fucking eating the cats and dogs, I mean, the fucking vile racism that came out of that man's mouth.
He can wash it down with bleach.
That's a classic, that is. A sitting president said that.
On that note, thank you very much, guys. If you want to check out these guys, check out the links in the description. Once again, thank you very much to my co-host. Hit that like and subscribe button. Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Ciao. Ciao, ciao.
Next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.